Food is fuel for your body, your mind, and definitely your sport. But let's face it, nutrition is confusing, and the expectations on girls and women to be thin and have a six-pack are exhausting. If you've ever been frustrated with your body, confused about nutrition, obsessed with eating healthy, or guilty when you don't, underate, overate, or overtrained, and overwhelmed with all the pressure, then this podcast is for you. Nutrition can be easy. You can take control of it, but it might start with letting go of control by asking for help and making a change. I'm Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, sports dietitian and owner of Rise Up Nutrition, where I empower female athletes to overcome nutrition concerns and perform at their highest level, to stop being confused by all the mixed or harmful messages, and finally have confidence in your body as a fierce, fit, and fueled female athlete. Hello, it's your host, Lindsay Elizabeth Cortez, registered dietitian, entrepreneur, mother, lifelong athlete. Our guest today is another fellow registered dietitian, Maddie Elm. I don't know if you've noticed, I've been having quite a few fellow dietitians and sports dietitians as guests these last couple episodes. It's been really great to connect with them. They're people I've interacted with just a little bit, typically virtually. And so to finally make that invite and be like, hey, let's get to know each other and share nutrition ideas and inspire our listeners and just provide great sports nutrition information on this platform has been so fun. So if you go back a few episodes, we have Kelsey Pontius, we had Megan Featherston, and now we have Maddie Elm. And between the three of them and myself, I just have so much hope for the future of sports nutrition, knowing we've got these amazing dietitians doing great work. So I also want to encourage you as a listener that if you need help with your personal nutrition, you know, you've got me, but you don't have just me. There's so many other amazing dietitians out there. So reach out to Maddie, reach out to Megan, reach out to Kelsey, listen to their episodes and learn more about their practice if you need help yourself. So Maddie is an elite runner. She's a high school cross country coach and a registered dietitian located currently in Boulder, Colorado. Her passion for sports nutrition began when she was a student athlete at the University of Colorado. After working with a CU sports dietitian and learning how to prioritize her own nutrition, Maddie saw major improvements in her performance and went from a walk-on to an All-American. Maddie now owns her own sports nutrition consulting business, Fueling Forward, where she works with athletes to help them reach their full potential by using nutrition as a tool for maximizing performance. She also trains with Team Boss, with the goal of competing in the 2024 Olympic trials. Look in the show notes for how to reach out and connect with Maddie. I love her business name, Fueling Forward. I just think it says a lot about movement, fueling your body, that forward momentum, and of course the RD for registered dietitian is snuck in there as well in her logo. So I love that. Speaking of working with all these sports dietitians, before we get to the episode, if you yourself are a dietitian, a nutritionist, a health coach, or really a coach of any kind, I would strongly encourage you to check out Practice Better. Practice Better is the online platform that I have been using to run my business for the past 6 years now. It is an all-in-one platform where you can book clients on a calendar, have client notes and charting, conduct your sessions through video chat, communicate, send emails, messages to your clients. You can send meal plans. You can evaluate their diet if you are coming from that nutrition perspective with food journaling in there. You can send invoices. I can't think of anything that you can't do within Practice Better. It is the better way to run your practice. It is all in one. Everything I've needed to run my business has been through Practice Better. And guess what? Maddie uses Practice Better too. So there's proof that a lot of dietitians are using this program because it is so helpful. If you have a private practice, if you're looking to start a private practice, it doesn't matter. I actually started using this platform when I had zero clients. That's right. I started using it with zero clients because I knew when I got that first client, I wanted a seamless way to do it. And now over the years, I've had hundreds of clients go through this platform. And now I have this great, you know, electronic database of all the clients I've worked with, and everything is stored there. So I just cannot speak highly enough. No matter where you are in your business or practice as a health coach or a dietitian or a nutritionist, I would strongly urge you to check out Practice Better. So you can head to practicebetter.io. Even better, actually, follow the link in the show notes. It's a very specific link, but by following that link, you can then use the code RISEUP20 and you can get 20% off of your subscription to Practice Better. By the way, every sign up gets a 14-day free trial, so you can kind of explore the platform and make sure that it fits your needs. I have no clue why it wouldn't. It's fit all of my needs that I've ever had, but you'll get that 14-day free trial and then 20% off using the code RISEUP20 and follow the link in the show notes. I'm also happy if you just, you know, want to chat about using the platform or have some questions. I do have 6 years of experience, so feel free to shoot me an email if you want to know how I've used it or get some help figuring something out. Although I will say that's another thing I love about Practice Better is their help and support team and their network and community where you can ask questions and get support and feedback really, really fast. So follow the link in the show notes, run your Practice Better with Practice Better, and use the code RISEUP20 for 20% off. Now let's chat to Maddie. Hi, Maddie. Thanks for joining.
Hi. Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm really excited to just get to know you a little bit more. I first learned of you, honestly, through your work as a dietitian. Then we'll also talk about, you know, your experiences as an elite runner as well. But through, you know, you being another sports dietitian, I think I stumbled upon you through social media. And, you know, then I've, you know, had clients along the way, you know, share a post of yours and stuff. So I just want to commend you for doing a really great job in the space of putting out good content for sports nutrition.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. And I feel the same way about your Instagram profile and the things that you post. It's always nice to have a community of sports dietitians who share similar values.
Yeah. And we do. I think this will be a good conversation that we share similar values to, I think, pass on to our people we're trying to help. Like, this is the way to fuel, you know?
Yes, exactly.
Maybe sometimes it's good to have guests who have differing opinions just for the sake of different opinions, but it's also, you know, there's a science behind this sports nutrition that we are preaching to our clients. And the more sports dietitians we have that are on the same page kind of proves that, like, this is what works. This is what we're leading you in the right path towards fueling your body properly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you have, I think, a really interesting story of why you became a dietitian. Interesting. And just how it really impacted your life as a runner. I love this part of your story that regarding running, you know, you were good at it, but you were a walk-on at the collegiate level all the way to, you know, really making it to a high level, 12th place in the Olympic trials back in 2020 or 2021, essentially, because
yes.
of COVID,
yeah.
in the 5K. Right? It's like, you know, from being a walk-on to that level of performance. And your story, which we want to hear from your own mouth and in your own words, is the role that nutrition played in that as well. So tell us a little bit about, you know, what was going on in college as you were a collegiate runner, as a walk-on, you know, what were some of your experiences and maybe some struggles that you were having performance health-wise at that time?
Definitely. So yeah, I was not a standout runner in high school. I actually played soccer. You couldn't have paid me to run before that. I didn't like running. My parents tried to convince me to try running much earlier in life. And I was like, why would I run? If I'm not chasing a ball, what's the point? So I kind of held out on getting into the sport for a long time. And then once I got to my junior year of high school, I started to realize that I wasn't actually that good at soccer. I was just good at the running part and I could get to the ball faster than everybody else. And I think a big thing for me with soccer was it was very like kind of political. Like if you were on the right club team, you would make varsity at the school. And it was very like, it wasn't about how good you were. It was kind of about who you were involved with and who you knew. And that was always really frustrating to me. So when I got into running, I loved it because if you ran the time, if you did the work, you ran the time, you made the team. And I thought that was such a
cut and dry
fair way to do it. And mm-hmm. it rewarded hard work, which I really appreciated. So
yeah.
That's kind of how I got into the sport. I was actually a dual sport athlete my junior year of high school. I didn't fully switch to running till my senior year. So I was a little late to the sport. And I was good, but I wasn't standout great. I was on a good team. We made it to NXN my senior year. We placed like, I think almost last. There's a really funny picture of us. We've never been to a national meet like that. There's a picture of all of us watching the fireworks at the start and the whole race is like gone. And we're all just looking up at the fireworks.
just mesmerized so, by being there.
Yes, exactly.
You forgot why you were there to run.
Exactly. And I feel like that really describes like the whole first part of my career. I was just happy to be there and I was having fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, it came time to choose going to college and I had teammates who were going to run in college. And funny, I actually initially was an invited walk-on at CU, University of Colorado Boulder. And I ran there for about a week and then I actually quit. I was like, I don't like this. This isn't for me. This is too hard. It's too competitive. It was a really intimidating environment.
Yeah.
So I actually stopped running my freshman year, didn't run for pretty much the whole year. And then my sophomore year, I was like, oh, I think I want to run again. So I tried out again. And this time I was not an invited walk-on. I had to actually like
try out,
run a time at a time trial.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I made the team and, you know, immediately was the slowest one by far and away. I was in my own workout group in the back. I mean, my long runs, like, just for reference, now I do like 16-mile long runs. I used to do like 8-mile long runs and barely be able to run like, you know, sub 7:30 pace, which is like some of my easy runs are that now. And so I just really, it took me a long time to get there. And a big part of that was the nutrition piece. I think I was really missing that. And my sophomore and junior year, I struggled a lot. I got sick all the time, like constantly sick. I had mono, I had strep throat, I had colds, I had the
flu.
All those
college germs.
You know, I was just like, wow. Right. Well, that's what I'm thinking. I'm like, oh, it's college. Like, this is just what happens.
Yeah.
You know, meanwhile, I'm getting probably like 5-6 hours of sleep. Definitely not eating what I needed to be eating. Mm-hmm. Find out my ferritin was like 8. You know, I was just really not in a place where my body was able to compete or train very well. And, you know, I think in my mind, I'm like, oh, I'm just not working hard enough or, you know, I need to run harder or whatever. And when they hired a dietitian, it was my junior year of college. I had never even heard of a dietitian. I didn't know what that was. Yeah. I hadn't heard of that career. And so she met with me and she's like, you know, you should be fueling around these things. You should be focusing on these carbs. A big one for me was we would go straight from our workouts to the weight room. And by the end of weights, I could barely, like, we'd have to bike home from practice. I could barely bike home. I was so tired.
Wow.
And so she started having me drink a chocolate milk in between our workout and weights. And all of a sudden, I could lift heavier weights and I could finish the workout feeling good and bike home and not feel like I was going to fall over on my bike and pass out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was just this like moment for me where I was like, oh, maybe it's not something I'm doing wrong. It's something that I'm just not doing. It's something that I need to be more aware of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a big moment for me and integrated all that into my life. And I think, you know, when you can lift heavier and when you can train harder, you see some of those shifts, like body composition shifts just naturally occurring just because your body can now develop muscles that you couldn't before. And so I started getting a lot stronger. I got a lot faster. And by my fifth year, I ended up making NCAAs and finishing actually 12th there as well in the final. So it was a big, a huge improvement. I never really saw myself getting to that point. I think my sophomore year 1500 meter PR was like 5:15 and my fifth year PR was 4:13. So I made a huge jump.
Wow.
But it wasn't all at once. It was definitely gradual. And I think obviously the main part of that was nutrition, which is why I ended up becoming a dietitian.
I know. I love that it so strongly impacted your performance. You know, we say this all the time as sports dietitians, you know, that nutrition impacts your performance, but you have that like firsthand experience of making the changes and feeling it as it relates to running and really seeing yourself succeed. Not just this perception of I feel stronger, but like my 5K time, or sorry, that was your 1500 time.
My 1500,
faster by a whole minute, which is a lot at that distance. Mm-hmm. I also think I resonate with some parts of your story myself too. I was a collegiate athlete and I felt in college, you know, I was the high school star that turned into the mediocre collegiate athlete. And yeah, I was sleep deprived, probably wasn't fueling well, struggled with anemia a little bit as well. Where I am different than you is we didn't have a sports dietitian to consult with, but I was studying nutrition. I was already studying nutrition. So I thought I knew the answers.
Yes.
but what I was studying in nutrition was like weight loss stuff. And so I got stuck on that mindset of like, if I could just, you know, clean up my diet, if I could eat cleaner, if I could shed a couple pounds. And that led me down the not ideal path of not intentional underfueling, because I had enough knowledge not to like do that to the extreme or what I thought. I mean, in hindsight, I was underfueling. I was, but I really thought I was doing it right at that time, and I wasn't.
Totally.
Which is really a bummer.
Yeah, and I think I had no idea that underfueling was a thing, and I think that's where it's sort of honestly like luck of the draw for athletes who they get to encounter in their experience, and
yeah.
It's definitely something that I wish all athletes could have access to nutrition resources and a dietitian from an earlier point in their career. Because it's kind of like that divergent moment where it's like, you know, I had those resources, I was able to learn and kind of figure that out. And then other athletes are trying to figure it out on their own. And that tends to lead more to a detriment. So
doesn't it?
It's hard. It's just like just how it is. And I think it's becoming more of a thing to have dietitians. But
yeah,
I was definitely very, very fortunate that CU is one of the earlier schools to hire one.
Absolutely. I might not include this. I don't know. But who was she? What was her name?
Laura Anderson.
Yeah. Doesn't she still work there?
Yes, she does. Yeah. I think she might be transitioning to a different job, but she, as far as I know, she's been there until this year, I think.
She's did some contracting work with the military as well, which I do too. So I've come across her a couple of times.
Yeah.
I don't know her well, but I've come across her in some email chains, and I think I was on a Zoom call with her once.
Yeah.
Regarding more military work, which I used to do too. So.
Yep. It was pretty awesome. Funny. She came from the Navy SEALs, and she was so intense, and we were all like, oh my God.
So
she had to dial it back a little for the little runners. But
right. There's a lot of – well, and that's my background too. I did sports nutrition, then I worked with Air Force Special Operations, and that's where I've come across her too. And it's like there's similarities of like elite level performance, but then there's also like, okay, are we dealing with the 16-year-old – girl or the like 30-year-old like combat guy that's deployed six times. A lot of similarities, a lot of major differences. Yes.
A lot of differences too.
Yeah. Well, wonderful. I can certainly speak highly for my interactions I've had with her too.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think going back to sort of just that idea of like getting the right information early enough. And I do think we're in a different place now as a profession of sports dietitian than we were 10 years ago. A very different place as far as resources and information. But there's still just so much mixed information. Like that's what I had when I was in college. I can figure this out on my own. And you still see that today with athletes because there's so much information out there. I can just figure it out on my own. Oh, I know I need to eat. And I fear that that's even coming with, you know, we'll talk about REDS in a little bit and just this idea of underfueling. I feel like so many athletes still come to me being like, I know I need to eat. I eat a lot, you know, and they're like trying to like already solve their problem. But it's like, we still got to scale back and get this basic education or actually start doing it. And maybe that's my follow-up question for you is like, you mentioned, you know, adding in chocolate milk. Just if you can think back to that time in your life, do you remember like a few of the major changes that you made that really made that difference for you to just fuel better?
Yeah. I mean, I think the big ones were like adding in snacks. I think I was always somebody... I've always been somebody who's had a big appetite. Like I never, ever skipped breakfast. Like I was always good at eating three meals a day, but I think I didn't realize I needed more than that as an athlete. And I think I would do that thing where you like, you make it to lunch and you're starving and then you eat lunch and then you make it to dinner and you're starving and you eat a huge dinner, which is great. But I now know that within day deficit that you're spending between meals can be a huge factor in like recovery and REDS risk and injury risk and all this kind of stuff. So that was a big thing we worked on, I know, was like filling in the gaps with some snacks. The dietitian, she did a really great job at CU of like implementing kind of a fueling station. At that time when I was there, only football had access to food. Mm-hmm. The other teams did not.
Oh yeah.
So she really advocated for us to have like a snack station where we would get like trail mix and nut butters and things like that. And so that was a huge game changer for me because I think this is another area where college athletes tend to have a big gap because I know I did, was like the planning ahead of packing things when you're gone all day long. I just wouldn't think about it, or I would get to campus and be like, oh, I left my snacks on the counter at home, or, you know, so having those resources and a way to actually execute our plan was huge for me. Mm-hmm. So that is a big part of what I realize now when I work with college athletes. This is like, I'm like, okay, I know the planning part is difficult, So that's kind of a big barrier, I think, to success for a lot of younger athletes for sure. But that was a big thing for me. So having those resources available on campus was a big game changer. Yeah, she stocked the fridge with chocolate milks in the weight room. So that was a big thing for me.
Yeah.
We ended up getting these like cards with some money to restaurants in the area.
Yeah.
So I, or like grocery stores and things like that. So I was able to get good meals more so in that way. And,
yeah,
you know, we talked about like what should be on our plate and what are carbs doing for us? What's protein doing for us? When do we need those things? You know, salad is not a performance friendly meal and why? And so it was more just, it was both the education piece that I was lacking and then also just somebody to help kind of guide me through it and walk me through what I actually needed to change. I wouldn't say I was super far off. I think I was very fortunate in that I always had a really healthy relationship with food and I never had restricted anything. So it wasn't necessarily a huge adjustment for me. It was really just adding in a few more things to what I was already doing. So I think that is one thing I want to mention. I was very fortunate in that sense. And so it was an easier transition than what I've seen some other athletes go through.
Yeah.
But those are kind of the main things for me. And, you know, then I stopped getting sick all the time. I started getting more sleep. I didn't get injured and stayed healthy. And that's really when you see the results, is when you can be consistent in your training and just keep building off your work. And that's when you run those PRs.
Yeah, absolutely. But, and this is so important too, you know, you say you're fortunate it wasn't too big of a shift, but sometimes that can be all it takes. It can be just that minor adjustment that makes a big difference. You know, how a regular person, I say regular, that wasn't nice to say.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, just like a non-serious yeah, athlete, because you maybe still somebody exercising, but like a non-serious athlete, like maybe just breakfast, lunch, and dinner and like a snack if you're hungry or not, like, you know, that does it. But you need that, ooh, I do need something in between run and lift. Ooh, I do need to be intentional about these snacks. And ooh, I do need to plan ahead. I can't just wing it during this phase in my life. And those shifts can make a huge difference. And I think back to my college career too, and I just think, I don't think I was far off either. I really wasn't that far off. But because I tried to do it on my own, I got a little further off than I should have been.
Totally.
Yeah,
it's almost harder when you aren't far off, because I think you think you're doing a great job and you sort of are, but there's just that small amount of space that can make all the difference. And that's when I tend to see athletes who are like, oh, I don't need a dietitian because I know what I'm doing.
Right.
It's more just like a second set of eyes to take a look at it and from a different angle and say like, this all looks good, but we also need to do these things.
Yeah.
Because initially I was like, I don't need to see a dietitian. Like, why would I do that? And then I went in and saw her because I think I don't remember if it was like everyone needs to go in and have a meeting with her and just introduce themselves or whatever.
Yeah.
Somehow I got interested in it and I decided to meet with her, and that's when I realized. So yeah, I think it's like, it's not just for people who are struggling. I think that's something that I also had thought. It was like, I don't have an eating disorder, so I don't need to see a dietitian. That doesn't apply to me.
Yeah.
But it's not just people who are struggling that might need that assistance. It's really any athlete can benefit from it.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. I agree 100%. So as you finish your collegiate career and really like saw, oh my gosh, I'm you know, you were doing really well. What was that decision to then continue to pursue running at an elite stage? And, you know, we know now you're on Team Boss, and I know that you're gearing up for the 2024 trials as well, which is really exciting. So yeah, just kind of finishing that trajectory from, you know, literally trying out, not knowing if you would have a spot, and then to say, I'm going to keep pursuing this. Just love to hear more about that decision to keep going with running.
Yeah, honestly, again, the kind of the story of my whole career is it was like a very last minute decision where I didn't know that running existed beyond college. I guess I wasn't really a follower of the sport. I will say I was very like, when I walked onto the team at CU, I had a really solid group of friends kind of outside of running who knew nothing about running, which to me was actually a really important thing to help find balance in the sport and life outside of the sport. But all that to say, I didn't really know what it meant to run post-collegiately. I kind of was thinking of like, you know, Jenny Simpson, who was one of the CU assistant coaches when I was there, who's like a professional runner winning medals. I'm like, oh, that's what running post-collegiately is. Like, you have to be a multiple time, you know, NCAA title winner to go on and get a contract and do all this stuff. So it never had crossed my mind. And at NCAA's I ended up making the final in the 1500 and placing 12th overall with a decent time in that year. And Mark Wetmore, my coach, was like, hey, have you ever thought about continuing to run? He's like, I think you could go on and keep running. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, what do I do? And he's like, yeah, I mean, just think about it. Like, you could run, you could keep racing, you could try to get a contract, you could do something like that. And at that point, I had already committed to get my master's at San Diego State. So I'd already decided I was moving to San Diego, you know, for the next school year. And I had decided I wanted to pursue becoming a dietitian. So CU, we didn't have any really nutrition courses. So I was a pre-med major. Mm. And then I double majored in psychology because I was there for 5 years. And so I was initially thinking I wanted to go into like nursing or something in the medical field. So when I learned about being a dietitian, I was like, oh, this is perfect. But I had to do all of those courses and get my master's and all that stuff. So yeah. I had already committed to that route. So I kind of brushed it off and I was like, oh, yeah, maybe we'll see.
Focus on career.
So I got to San Diego. Yeah, exactly. I was like, maybe.
Yeah.
So I get to San Diego. I think I did a little bit of running over the summer, but not a ton. I actually connected with a coach out there, Joaquin Cruz, if you're familiar with him. He was a Brazilian 800 meter runner. He was almost a world record holder. He ran like 141 something in the 800 back in the 80s. Wow. He's amazing. So I actually connected with him because I was working as an intern at the Olympic Training Center in Chula Vista out in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And so he agreed to coach me for a little bit, ran with him for a while, found that I was still running as well as I was in college. I ran another PR in the 1500. So I was like, oh, I kind of want to keep running. And it's tough, like, you know, getting a contract in college is really difficult. Like, you do have to be pretty competitive, pretty high up there consistently to get your name recognized for the most part. So in a way, I had sort of missed that window by not capitalizing on my NCAA performance then and trying to get, like, you know, an agent and get all this stuff done. And again, it's just a confusing process that I knew nothing about. So didn't end up getting any type of contract or anything. But when I came back to Colorado in between my master's program and my dietetic internship, I reconnected with Joe and Emma, who were my teammates at CU in college. And at this time, team boss was like Corey, or not, I don't even know if Corey was there yet. It was like Dom, Scott, Emma, and Aisha. And those were the three people on the team.
Yeah.
Nick Harris, who's now my fiance, but then was my boyfriend and teammate in college. He had reached out to Joe and asked to run with him. So I just kind of like started showing up to their practices and I was like, can I run with you guys?
Yeah.
And then when I was leaving for my dietetic internship, I was like, hey, Joe, like, would you consider coaching me, distance coaching me? And he's like, sure, why not? So yeah, I went through 2019 in Nashville doing my like dietetic internship out there, working full time, training. Really, really stressful year. Wouldn't recommend, wouldn't do again.
Those dietetic internships are rough. Yeah.
They are rough. Yes. Yeah. So yeah, made it through that. And then, you know, from there again, it was kind of like the opportunity for a contract felt like that maybe wasn't going to happen. But I just have always had this mindset around running that like, I want to see what I can accomplish. And I want to get the most out of the sport that I possibly can. And I felt like I had some unfinished business in the sport. So that's kind of why, like, I felt like I just kept sticking with it, even though I was like, oh, I don't really know, but like, let's just keep going. Let's see. So yeah, then 2020 happened, which was the COVID year. And I actually, it's funny. It's like, I think runners had one of two experiences. Either they were ready for 2020 and then it got moved to 2021. And unfortunately that didn't work out for them or for myself.
Yeah. Just training gets screwed up, delayed.
Exactly. Yeah.
They were peaking and then didn't happen. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's such hard, like it's such a hard timing thing. And it was like, you know, it was in like March, of course. And so people are gearing up for the trials. I ended up getting injured when I was in my dietetic internship and running. I was doing too much. I wasn't recovering well. I ended up getting a stress fracture. Mm. And so I had to take 12 weeks in the pool in the fall of 2019 into 2020. So I actually, maybe I'm one of the few people that can say this, but I benefited from the trials being pushed to 2021. So I was able to really like slowly get back into things, build a really healthy body back up, find more life balance. And by 2021, I was able to get my 5K down from like, I think I'd run 1540 in 2020, got it down to like 15:19, which qualified me for the trials in 2021. And
yeah,
then I had a great go at the trials and made the final and placed top 12 there. And so then I was like, well, I guess I'll go for another cycle. So here we are, here going into the 2024 nearly 4 years later, Olympic trials.
Yeah.
Still going. So yeah, it's funny. I don't know. I think my career is not like what I would explain as being, this is what running looks like post-collegiately. I feel like it's been a lot of just kind of like, you know, it's shifted in terms of how prominent it's been in the forefront of what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I've been able to be consistent, still enjoy running, and find my success in my own way. So
yeah,
it's different. I mean, some people, you know, get the contract out of college and it's a much easier path, but I'd never like to make things easy on myself. So here we are.
It's very, you know, self-made path, you know, and
yeah.
I think just even just the idea of giving yourself the opportunity, you know, you made a decision to pursue the career of dietetics, but you never closed the door on running.
Mm-hmm.
And just like you were a walk-on in college, you just kind of kept showing up. I'm going to connect with these people. I'm going to show up to practices. I'm going to ask if this person wants to coach me. And you really made your own path. And then I think also probably a testament to nutrition, just like when you were in college, it wasn't like, you know, you PR'd the week that you made nutrition changes. It was gradually over 3 years of consistently mm-hmm. feeling better. You made these huge improvements. And that's probably true just about your consistency and taking care of your body over the past 4-6 years as well. You know, now you are a dietitian, you have so much knowledge in fueling your body, recovering, taking care of it, that it really complements your training quite perfectly. So you've been really consistent, you know, with this self-made path.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I think that's been my biggest takeaway is like anything that happens quickly tends to not be sustainable. And it's really hard when you see the end goal, you see where you want to be. We all want to get there as quickly as we can, but I've learned that just taking your time and focusing on making it sustainable, making it fun is really what allowed me to get there. And I'm very fortunate in that I've really only had one major injury.
Yeah.
And I haven't had an injury since 2019. And it's so in 5 years. And
yeah,
I run quite a few miles and, you know, I'm able to sustain it because I found a way to support my training in a way that's healthy. And as a dietitian, I feel like it's really important to me that I practice what I preach and I have this mm-hmm. experience to share kind of firsthand with my athletes that I work with. And I just think it's really important to not just tell people what they should be doing, but also do it myself and have that kind of, you know, here I'm living proof that it works and that it can be done. And it's not easy and, you know, it can be difficult and it's a lot to balance, but you can do it if you focus and do it the right way and you can get there.
Absolutely. And I'm curious, just like you had to make a few shifts in college and they were gradual, have there been shifts as you carved that path for yourself to become an elite runner? And like, are there any extra nutritional shifts that have kind of developed over the years that as you advanced in running, whether it's increased mileage or harder workouts or just gearing up for a really important race? Are there any other little shifts that have happened over time that are worth like noting or that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think with nutrition, like I'm somebody who fully believes in like never stop learning. So I always try to learn new things and find new areas of nutrition that I didn't know about before. So in college, I never really fueled during long runs. I didn't really know that was a thing. I thought it was only for marathoners. So within the last few years, that's something that I've been really working hard on implementing, even though I'm not a marathoner. I've been really fueling my long runs, hydration, like doing a lot more with electrolytes. Again, I think as a society, we're always taught like, watch out for sodium, be careful of sodium. And I am a very salty sweater. I lose a ton of salt.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a huge, you know, disadvantage for me to not be getting enough electrolytes. So really dialing in my hydration, my during run fueling has been a big one. And then I've also been really focusing on getting enough carbs. I think this is something that I preach to all of my runners, but everyone's worried about getting too many carbs. And I have yet to see a runner who has ever gotten too many carbs at any point in my career.
I agree. I haven't either. It's like every, not just runners, almost every athlete. I'm like, we can benefit from more carbs here.
Exactly. And I don't ever encourage athletes to track. I don't track myself, but I'll sometimes do like a little check-in on my carbs and see how I'm doing with hitting, you know, carb needs and things like that. And it's definitely eye-opening to learn, you know, how many carbs an endurance athlete needs and what it actually looks like to hit that. And I understand that it's challenging. And so I get to try out all the little tips and tricks like the juices and the flavored things and the sports drinks with carbs. And So I feel like I use myself as an experimental athlete, essentially, with everything that I then tell other athletes to do, you know, kind of basing what I'm trying on myself in new things I'm learning as a dietitian. So I feel like I'm always trying new things when it comes to fueling. I'm just trying to build upon the basics that I already have. Nothing, I don't do anything like crazy, but you know, it's just the carbs and the hydration and things like that. And then from a training standpoint, we've definitely worked on getting my mileage up there. I run 80 mile weeks now and I do longer long runs. And so it's taken me a while to get there. I definitely slowly increased to get there. Taking easy days easy has been a huge thing that we focused on. We go by heart rate. Sometimes it's surprising how slow you have to go to actually have it be considered an easy run.
Yeah.
And I definitely think I ran some easy runs too hard in college, and that definitely can burn you out or, you know, make low iron issues worse. And so learning how to balance the hard days with the easy days. And that's been something that I've learned a lot about over the last, you know, 5-6 years.
Yeah. You know, I think we graduate, we get our degree, we get our certificate in becoming a dietitian, and we are the experts on paper, but the more experience you have, the more practice, we're always learning. And, you know, I can definitely say for myself, I'm like, I know way more about nutrition now than I did when I first, you know, walked out of the testing exam with my paper saying I'm a dietitian. Yeah. And then when you have that firsthand experience as well with different things, you know, performing at a high level, getting to those 80 mile weeks, or it just other, all these different experiences that you have and getting kind of some firsthand experiences, like we as dietitians can change our diet as well. And that's, it's really helpful. And I just love, that's why it's like, okay, you had that experience as a collegiate athlete and now at the elite running stage, and just knowing those gradual shifts over time, we can say, we can know the science, we can read a textbook and say, oh, we need, you know, 10 grams per kilogram of carbohydrate. But to actually like, really practice that and implement that into your life, it takes time. It really does. And so I know sometimes people might listen to this podcast or other nutrition resources and can maybe roll their eyes. Yeah, I know during run fuel. Yeah, I know carbs. Yeah, I know electrolytes. But to really apply it is where the magic happens. And it really does take time.
Yeah. And that's where I think it's important, like for dietitians to understand where the potential obstacles are. So, you know, if I'm trying to hit X amount of carbs in a day and I realize like, wow, this is really hard, this is a lot of carbs, then you understand where your athletes are coming from when they say like, this is difficult. And I have a really solid foundation. So it's definitely like, it's eye-opening to be the person that you're trying to have your athletes be, because then you can really say like from experience, here's where it tends to get difficult. Here's what you can try to overcome that. You can do it. Like, you know, it definitely, I think the practicing what you preach and having your own life experience is really important, just as important as having that knowledge in this field. So yeah, that's why I love working with runners, because I am one, and I feel like we can really have a lot in common with all the challenges and things like that.
Do your team boss teammates, like, are you their, all their dietitian, essentially?
I wouldn't say I'm like their dietitian. If people have questions or like need a second set of eyes to look over blood work, I am always here to help. And, you know, I have some teammates who will bounce more things off me than others. And generally speaking, like I would say Team Boss is a very unique team in that everyone is so good at fueling. Like everyone is crushing their fueling.
Good.
Everyone's got long run fuel. You should see us on our long runs. It's like just this, Joe's got like 7 gels out the window of his car trying to hand off to us. And we're all like, you know, we've got this good system where we're all like getting over to the car to get our food and then giving him our wrappers, taking our waters. So yeah, I think Team Boss is really dialed in with nutrition. And I feel really fortunate to be on a team where the environment around fueling is so positive. I know that's not a lot of runners' experiences.
Yeah.
So that's something that I think makes Team Boss unique. And I think this is just an aside, but I was thinking about this the other day, and I think Team Boss has to have one of the lowest injury rates in pro running. Like, yeah. I can't remember the last person who had a stress fracture on our team.
Wow.
Which, yeah, I think is a testament to Joe and my teammates and just the environment as a whole. Mm-hmm. So long answer to your question. I think not as many people need nutrition support or advice, but I'm always there to help if they need it. Yeah.
Have that quick question or something. But that's great that it's such a good environment. Because also I would be like, that'd actually be kind of tough. You're like, wait, I'm your teammate, but I'm running a business. Like, that'd be a little messy. You'd be definitely way overworked, I'd tell you that. Yeah. So I'm glad that. And that's always hard. I know that's one of my biggest struggles as a dietitian is when it comes to like friends.
Yes.
Like asking nutrition advice. And it's like,
for sure,
because it's really difficult, because it's like, I want to help you, but also like to really help you, I'd have to have like an in-depth session. I'd really have to look over your diet. We'd have to talk through this, you know. And it's just like, I don't want to kind of cross that boundary with a friend. It's worked the opposite, actually, where clients have later become friends. That's easy. Yes, easy, but the roles reverse is actually quite difficult.
Yeah. And I think people think we just like give advice and we're like, oh, try this. But it's really, there's so many things that go into me curating somebody's recommendations. And I really need to understand a lot of things, from medical background to training to current fueling to, there's just so many things that go into it. It's not just a simple eat more of this. And I think a lot of people don't realize that.
They don't realize that. They just think on a casual conversation over a cup of coffee or whatever, like you can just tell them how to fix all their nutrition problems. And it's like, no, this is why it's a job, because it takes me time and effort to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So anyways, I'm glad that's not happening to you, because I was thinking that would get real tricky.
Yes. No, my teammates are very aware. They're very, very thoughtful about that stuff. And they're always, you know, they'll buy me a coffee if they do ask me questions, which they don't need to do that. But, you know, they're very thoughtful in that way. So,
That's awesome. Yeah. So you mentioned like shifts as you have progressed in your running. During Run Fuel was a shift, just really dialing in those carbohydrates and then electrolytes. And I have to say, I've come across your social media page before in Instagram, but last night I was looking through a few more and I really saw that on your videos. I was like, she does a lot of electrolytes. I wasn't counting up the milligrams or anything, but I saw it.
Yeah.
So that's wonderful. And I personally have, although I grew up in Massachusetts, I've been living in southern states for a while now. So I've felt that difference from like New England girl than like Florida, Georgia, Texas. Like, I need electrolytes for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel that. But I'm curious to know, and I know you have whole foods, first foods approach, just like I do, and then electrolytes as needed. I didn't, as a scope in your Instagram page, didn't see many supplements. And I just wanted to kind of ask you your stance on supplements, not just as a dietitian, but also as a runner. Like, where, if they do, where do they come into play, and which ones, or how do you go about that?
Yeah, I think supplements are tricky, especially with social media, because I feel like there are a lot of influencers for supplement companies. And this is where, as a dietitian and a runner, it's really difficult sometimes to see athletes promoting these supplements that, like, a lot of them actually don't use. And I know that they don't use them, and they just promote them because they get paid to. And then I have clients who are like, oh, I saw so-and-so using this, so I bought it. And I'm like, well, so-and-so doesn't use it. So, you know, it's hard, because I think there's this kind of misconception around supplements that they're going to be this like fast track to fixing your problems. And what I tell my high school athletes is that you can't put a roof on a house without walls. So if you don't have the basics of fueling down, if you're not eating three meals a day, if you're not eating snacks, you're not fueling before and after runs, you're not doing the electrolytes, then putting, you know, a supplement roof on that isn't going to do anything for you. There's nothing to support it. There's nothing to actually make it work. So I think supplements are so individual too. Like, there are, again, I really have to go in depth to each athlete that I work with to be able to make supplement recommendations that are going to actually help them. And if we do any type of supplement work, it's always temporary. And we always have to understand, why do we need this supplement in the first place? Like, anytime we have a deficiency, it's coming from something. So we're clearly missing something in our foundation of nutrition. So we can add the supplement in to help support that correction, but we still have to kind of go back to square one and ask ourselves, how did we get here? Because then when we take the supplement away, if we haven't done all that work, everything goes back to how it used to be. So that's mm-hmm. where for me with supplements, it's like, there is a time and a place for sure. And there are definitely people who need them. And I've used supplements in my life, like iron for one is a big one for me, mm-hmm. you know, magnesium, vitamin D. There are certain things that I definitely am good recommending to athletes and encouraging them to do, but there's never a supplement for me that's like a blanket, like everybody should take this or everybody should try this. I think it needs to be very individualized. And you also just need to be aware that just taking a supplement is not going to correct things. It needs to be a more fundamental change. And yeah, I think it can just get sketchy when you get into the weeds with some of those supplements out there mm-hmm. too. And just like understanding what's in the supplement and how like unregulated they are, right? Like supplements just are not regulated and we don't always know what's in them. And there was like a big issue for a while with heavy metals in protein powders and you know, it's just, we don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's scary. And especially like with young athletes too, that's really where I get more concerned with athletes who are overdoing it with the supplements. It can just really affect your health, your growth, your development, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think just understanding supplement safety is a big one and just knowing what's a reliable brand, what's not, what's real, what's science-backed, what's not, what claims are actually, you know, based in evidence and what aren't. Yeah, so I think it's supplements are tricky, I think is kind of the way I would like sum up my view of supplements.
It is.
I'm not against them, but I think if we don't have that, the foundations of nutrition, then there's not really a purpose for those supplements, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah. Agree 100% in that foundation first. And you also mentioned like, if we are going to take a supplement now, it's hopefully a temporary thing because we should be able to support our nutrition and fueling needs with food or lifestyle, you know, approaches. And so this might be temporary to get over this, help you get over this issue or this period in your life or this injury or this training phase, whatever it might be. But I kind of wanted to double tap on how difficult it is actually as a dietitian and now as a runner for you as well. I'm sure you've had many supplement brands reach out to you
mm-hmm.
and want you to promote. And I do not blame athletes for they need an income and it's hard. I don't blame anybody for trying, especially if it is something that's like NSF certified safe for sport, you know, like and or like something that they know is, I really hope most athletes try and take that step to make sure that it's at least like clean for a sport, which is even that's a whole tricky thing to ensure that. But it's really challenging because it's like there's so many brands to choose from. I've aligned myself with a few brands, but I could tell you there's mm-hmm. been hundreds that have approached me. And I just kind of mm-hmm. have to like put my blinders up and be like, it's just too tricky to go down that path.
Yeah.
Because as a dietitian, you want to treat, not everybody needs iron. Not everybody needs vitamin D. Not everybody needs magnesium. And those are some pretty generally safe ones as well that in a sport population people might need. But even if you decide somebody does need it, from there, there's dozens of good quality brands to choose from. So it's really hard mm-hmm. to just align yourself with like one brand.
Yes, I agree.
And yeah, certainly athletes have done that because it's I would imagine, difficult to maintain running at a high level unless you have like, you know, really good professional contract. And so, you know, they're going to align themselves with brands. But as you said, the insider view, sometimes they're not even taking them.
Yes, for sure. And I think that's like, that's kind of a flaw in the sport of running as a whole. It's a very difficult sport to fully support yourself with financially, even if you do have a great contract. So it does kind of force athletes' hands in deals like supplement companies and stuff like that, which I understand and I don't look down on anybody for doing that. But I just like to remind the athletes that I work with that just because somebody is posting about it doesn't mean that they're using it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that it's right for you. So I think that's important to be conscious consumers when we have all of these influencers and all of this information coming in. A lot of it is stuff that the company has told the athlete to say.
Yeah.
And supplements can get pretty, they can get pretty out there with their claims because they're just not very regulated. And I think a lot of people will hear things like, oh, I'm tired, I'm sore, so then I should take this supplement. And it's like, well, the reason you're tired and sore is because you're not fueling enough. You're not fueling before and after your runs. So taking the supplements is not going to change
that. Because
you
got 5 hours of sleep. It's because your carbs are low. Yeah, like there's exactly. so many. I know. People still just struggle to accept the big picture.
No, we're like, and I get it. Like, we all want that quick fix. Like, no one wants to have to put in tons and tons of work. I understand that for sure. But there's a middle ground.
Yeah, and I also want to go back to, again, if it does come down to you needing a supplement, there's usually multiple different brands or options. And that's where having a sports dietitian like yourself or like myself can help just show you your options. So, and it's, I'm sure it's been hard for you to stay relatively brand neutral. And I wouldn't judge you if you do align yourself with somebody, because I have aligned myself with a few companies too, because it's like, you know, at the end of the day, okay, there's, you know what, there's six brands that I find myself recommending most often, you know, okay. You know, oh, we can get affiliate commission, you know, by continuing that. And, you know, as we continue being dietitians, if more brands and companies emerge that also prove themselves worthy, wonderful. Because I think it's always important to give the consumer options.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I have one more, a little controversial question for you, because again, I from what I understand of your practice, you're definitely an all foods fit approach, both in your personal life and as a dietitian for your clients. So all foods fit, and not certainly having a mentality of like, there's no such thing as a bad food. All foods can be good or find a way into your diet. And controversial topic of alcohol.
Yeah.
I'm curious, as a runner at your level, do you want to share, and whatever you're comfortable with, sharing your dietitian viewpoint, sharing your runner personal life viewpoint, where does alcohol fit into a performance diet?
Yeah, I think to me, alcohol is kind of its own category, because, like, you know, dessert foods or foods that people would consider unhealthy or bad, there's always redeeming qualities in those. Like, we can get carbs, we can get healthy fats or fats in general, we can get enjoyment and things like that that are really important.
Yes.
Alcohol to me is one of those, it's its own thing, because it doesn't really provide anything for us from like a nutrition standpoint. I would say it's more of just like an enjoyment, a social thing, which is super important as well. For me personally, I don't really enjoy alcohol very much. It's just never something that I have liked. It really affects my sleep. I have always had just like, I'm very sensitive with sleep related things, and I can easily have bad nights of sleep if my whole like sleep routine's not perfect. And alcohol is one that I always know across the board affects my sleep. And so honestly, when I'm in season,
and it's proven scientifically that it disrupts sleep. Absolutely. It disrupts that REM sleep.
It does. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And when I'm in season, it is the one thing that I don't really partake in, just because it does affect my sleep, which affects my recovery. When you're running 80 mile weeks, like, you know, I have a lot of high mileage days, even if they're not workout days. And so recovery is the absolute most important thing in stringing together those workouts. And for me, it's like the alcohol piece isn't really something that's worth taking away from, not that it takes away from it necessarily, but it's low hanging fruit to me that it's not worth potentially interfering with my sleep and my recovery. And even in my off season, again, it's just not really something that is like a big part of my life or something that I enjoy a ton. Like, I'll have a glass of wine, you know, a few times a week when I'm out of my season, or, you know, have cocktails with my friends at happy hour and things like that. And I've never really done much more than that. But in season, I don't really do it often. Sometimes if it's like an early dinner, I'll have a glass of wine, you know, 5 o'clock is great. But it just doesn't really make me feel great. And it definitely affects my sleep and recovery. And so it's just not worth it to me. But I have lots of athletes that I work with who are like, don't take away my glass of wine. And I'm like, I'm not going to at all. Like, here are some ways that you can minimize how it might impact your sleep. You know, having it earlier, staying hydrated, having electrolytes after you have your wine, having it with food.
Yeah.
You know, there's ways that you can incorporate it. It's just not personally something that I prioritize.
Yeah. I think a great explanation. And it is a little tricky, because as somebody, again, who's like that food freedom approach, all foods fit, but it is its own category, because it is a toxin to the body. At the same time,
it is.
That doesn't mean you can't have it, and it doesn't mean you're unhealthy for having it either, right? So it's like, I don't want to demonize. I have alcohol at some times in my diet. I used to a lot more when I was younger, and I don't know how I survived it. You know, I'm like,
went through that phase.
Yeah.
Learned what I needed to learn.
Yeah. But now I think I've come to the same for different reasons, not necessarily for running, but it is the sleep is the biggest thing for me, especially in my life right now. I've got two little ones, and one of them has a medical thing that disrupts sleep even more. And I cannot. It is, it was 3 weeks ago. We went out as a family for tacos midday.
Yeah.
And I had a frozen margarita. I thought, it's the afternoon. It's early enough.
Yeah.
I can't do it again. It just, you know, I think when you have other priorities, you want your body to perform. You want it to sleep well, be well rested, recover, perform. Mm-hmm. But you have to make that decision yourself, because it is still not inherently, you know, a bad thing. If somebody else can have it, my husband can have beer with dinner and it doesn't affect his sleep at all. And that's fine.
Yep. Yep.
Is it a him thing? Is it a man thing? I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
So I think it's really important for people to establish their own, like, we have our relationship with food. I really think that our relationship with alcohol is kind of a separate category. They're not they're not really the same thing. And
I would agree.
It crosses over into nutrition, because it's something we consume with food or as a beverage.
Yeah.
But it's how it reacts in our body chemically is quite different than food. You know, you have your diet propaganda that will say sugar's a toxin. No, it's not. We survive off of sugar.
Yeah.
Alcohol we can survive without. Right. So they exactly. are two different categories, though. There's so much overlap. And it's real tricky.
It is. And like my teammate Emma Bates will say this in any interview she does. She has two glasses of wine the night before her marathons. And then she goes and
really?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. And she's like, oh, it helps me sleep better.
She's good.
And I'm the opposite. If I did that, I would feel terrible in the morning. Yeah. So it's very individual. And some athletes can do it. Some can't.
Yeah.
Some want to, some don't. And to me, I'm just really indifferent to it. It's not anything that adds meaning to my life. And not drinking it doesn't take anything away from me. So I'm like, I don't really feel that it's important. So
yeah,
just depends on the person.
Yeah. Awesome. Thanks for exploring that topic with me. Cause I thought, you know, there's the nutrition piece and then there's the like performance running piece as well there too. Cause I have spoken, you know, from whether it's a high level athlete or a recreational athlete too, but it really does affect us. It also comes down to quantity and amount, but so many athletes, like the next day after consuming alcohol, the day or night before, it's like, oh my gosh, I was so run down. My sleep wasn't good. Or it's just like, I felt terrible during that workout, because you're actually how your metabolism and body works for the next 24, 48 hours can be a little shifted as well with like fuel sourcage breakdown. So it's something to consider, but it's individualized. And this is my first time vocalizing that, but I really feel that your relationship with alcohol and your relationship with food, I do think they're two separate things, probably on like, parallel to each other, parallel like trajectories, but like overlap. Separate. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I agree.
Cool. Where are we at? Whoa, it's almost been an hour. This always happens.
I've got plenty of time, so no rush.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So I think just like another topic that's real popular in the sports nutrition world and running world is just our awareness around REDS, relative energy deficiency in sport. And you mentioned with your personal background too, like, maybe you weren't too far off. Like you weren't in your collegiate career, at least. Maybe REDS was not a big concern. We just had to make a few tweaks and really do better. Now, as a dietitian working with other athletes, are you seeing this as a pretty common problem like I have been?
I would say probably 90% of athletes I work with have it to some degree.
Yeah.
And I think it's something that can sound really scary. Like you hear REDS or someone tells you you might have it and you're like, oh my gosh, it's like this diagnosis. It's this like condition, but it's also on a spectrum and it doesn't really take a lot of an energy deficit to get there. And it's more of how long you've been spending in a deficit. So I always try to reassure athletes that like, it's not a death sentence. It's not like you don't have to stop running always. It's not always this thing that's like going to be this affliction that's going to affect you for the whole year. But it's good to be aware of, because there are a lot of symptoms that come up earlier than others. And so knowing what the symptoms of REDS are and what it could feel like and how to catch it and correct it before it becomes an issue, I think is super important. So sometimes I'll have athletes who have maybe three symptoms of REDS, and then sometimes I'll have athletes who have 10 symptoms. And so it is very much a spectrum. And a lot of times what causes those symptoms across the board is under fueling or just not getting enough carbs or, you know, not enough of the right things. And it, I think most athletes too think like, oh, I have to have lost my period or it has to be really, really extreme for this to be under fueling or to be a problem. And that's not really true, right? Like a lot of times that's the, like losing your period is kind of the last thing that happens mm-hmm. when you've been in this deficit for a long time. And so there is definitely a spectrum. It's not just like a diagnosis and criteria that are all the same for every single athlete. But I think because we're more aware of it, I'm hoping the narrative is kind of shifting around what's important when it comes to fueling and performance. And I think, you know, we can all agree that for the last however many years, that lighter is faster mentality has kind of permeated the sport and really caused a lot of issues for young athletes and athletes in college and beyond. And it's a huge disservice to athletes to try to convince them of that. And I think, unfortunately, there are a lot of kind of old school coaches who perpetuate that myth and, you know, teammates and parents. And there's just so much misinformation out there about what actually impacts your performance. And like I said earlier, I have never seen an athlete in my whole career who is overfueling or eating too many carbs. I've never seen that. I always see the opposite, where we're underfueling and we're not eating enough carbs.
Yeah.
And those are the things that are going to cause the much bigger detriment to performance than, you know, being slightly heavier, but well fueled, you will run better. I weigh the most I've ever weighed in my life right now, and I'm running faster than I ever have in my life. And that's not a correlation. That's just something that, you know, it's like, I'm stronger, I'm mm-hmm. older. There's just so many things that happen. Your body shifts, it's supposed to shift. That one measure, you know, they say there's that one study, and I can never remember who published it, but it's like 80 different factors affect performance. And one factor is weight.
Yeah.
So yes. If you focus on that one factor and you forget the other 79, that's not going to be the answer.
You're doing yourself a disservice.
So it's hard.
Yeah.
But yes, I think it's, I'm glad it's becoming a term that people are more aware of. And I do think a lot more athletes have it than have ever realized or have even thought about. But it is very, very prevalent. And developing REDS is going to be much more detrimental to performance, like I said, than experiencing body shifts and things like that.
Yeah. And I think to really hit this home, it's, yeah, the detriment of underfueling can be so severe. It also can be really picked up on rather quickly. Like, you know, if you're underfueling for a week, that might not be a huge problem, but you might notice it within a week of I'm run down, I'm sore, or like my bathroom habits were weird this week, or I didn't sleep very well this week, right? You're going to notice that like pretty darn quickly. And then the longer that goes on, the more severe and problematic it can become to be in the state of low energy availability or REDS. And it ultimately can lead to worsening performance or more internal health issues like hormonal imbalance, like you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And yet so many athletes, I had this question from my group clients, was it just last month, like still being like, but how do I know if I'm overfueling? And it's like,
always,
you know, one of the reasons we don't know if we're overfueling is because it's not as detrimental. It doesn't really hurt us as much. So it's not something mm-hmm. to really worry about. Like if you did overfuel today, most likely you're just going to have a little extra energy tomorrow and that's going to feel like a good thing.
Yeah.
If you did overfuel for a week, maybe you're just feeling real energized, or maybe your hunger cues then kind of back off a little bit and it self-regulates because your body's like, oh, I'm full. I'm not as hungry. Like I'm good with this portion of rice on my plate. I usually have a little more, but I'm good right now. You know, and you like self-regulate and it's not a big deal. I don't know if you have anything to add to that for like, how do people know if they're overfueling? It's just not as big of a deal. And it kind of figures, most of the time, it figures itself out versus the underfueling doesn't figure itself out. Like you have to intentionally try and fix that. Do you agree?
Yeah. And what I always tell athletes is like, your body is not trying to trick you. If you're hungry, you need something. It's not trying to get you to eat more than you need. It doesn't have any ulterior motive other than to get the fuel that it needs to be alive.
Yeah.
Your body is not like an independent thinking thing. It's literally just a machine that's like, here's what I need. Here's my input. Yeah. Here's what I need you to do. You know, and it's not, there's not this like, oh, can I trust that hunger? Is that real? And I think that's where a lot of athletes struggle, is that they've at some point in their life ignored what their body has been telling them that they need. So you lose that connection with, is this feeling hunger? Is this fullness? Is this overeating? Is this undereating?
Yeah.
You just can't tell. And so you start to second guess yourself. You lose that confidence in your ability to listen to your body. And I think that's where athletes, in my experience, tend to run into that. Am I overfueling? Am I underfueling? They just don't know how to tune into their own body. So a big thing that I think is really important for my athletes is to learn how to tune back into that stuff, learn what it really does feel like to overfuel versus underfuel. And again, I have never, ever, ever had an athlete who is overfueling, truly ever. And I think that's something that athletes think is really common, but it's not. Underfueling is much more common, much more detrimental. If you overfuel, I mean, I think the biggest example I give is like Thanksgiving. Like, we know how that feels.
Yeah.
And then we're just not as hungry for a second. And then it comes back around. Like,
right.
Your body will level itself out. And so building that trust with your body is super important. And then knowing for athletes too, there's times on the flip side where we might not feel hungry, but we still need to eat. And that's where finding a middle ground between like that intuitive eating. So eating when we're hungry versus what I call logical eating, which is eating when we should be eating, mm-hmm. Can be difficult. And reestablishing that connection can be really hard. And I think that's when athletes question, am I overfueling? I never feel hungry. And it just takes a bit for your appetite cues to come back when you've been in a period of underfueling for so long. So yeah, I try to teach athletes more of what to look for when you're underfueling, kind of the first signs of underfueling, like poor sleep, changes in digestion. Irritability tends to be a big one that comes up for a lot of athletes, or mood changes, you know, trouble focusing, soreness all the time, easy runs feel really, really hard, things like that, that are going to be more common than if you're overfueling, you might just feel too full for an hour. It's just not the same thing.
It's
not the same issue, and it's not going to cause the same outcome.
Nope. I agree completely. So I love that, you know, you working with your athletes and clients, not just on like nutrition for high performance, but really that it being in tune, intuitive, listening to their body, trusting in their body more. I think that's wonderful. And it's very parallel to, you know, my practice as well. So tell us a little bit about your practice and the ways that you are currently helping clients. And if you want to talk about right now versus maybe some plans for the future as well, if you expect that to change or develop differently.
Yeah, totally. So I've recently actually, speaking of continuing to learn, I've gone through this like functional medicine for dietitians course, which has been awesome. And I've loved it.
Great.
So I've been incorporating a little bit more testing for some of my athletes. I'll do a little bit more with like blood work. Mm-hmm. I can do hair tissue mineral analysis, which is so much fun. GI maps for people who have really chronic GI issues, Dutch tests for hormones. So it's been really fun to implement some new tools, which I've been loving. But typically what I do with athletes, if I'm working with them in a one-on-one setting, is we kind of work on those foundations of fueling. So what I call meal hygiene, like, are you eating in your car on your way to go somewhere? Are you sitting at a table and eating and focusing on your food? Are you chewing well enough? You know, are you drinking too much with your food and that's taking away from how much you're eating? Balance of plates. So a lot of athletes are like, oh, salad, healthy, this is going to help me be better. But salad for me is under fueling because you're not getting carbs, you're not getting protein, you're not getting calories. So we really work on those fundamentals of like how you're approaching meal times, how you're building a day-to-day fueling schedule, how you're balancing your meals and your snacks, always fueling before and after training, hydration, fueling during training. I always start with those basics.
Yeah.
For some athletes, depending on the symptoms they're having or what they're dealing with, we will expand into blood work. So trying to figure out, you know, if there's an iron issue, how can we address that from a more holistic approach? So we're not just pounding tons of iron. Like, how can we, you know, make it something that's going to come up and stay up? And so it's just a lot of individualized stuff, I would say, like working very much with the athlete and understanding, you know, if I'm sure you run into this too, where an athlete will be like, I went to my doctor, they looked at my blood work, they said everything was fine, but I feel terrible. And there's this middle ground where symptoms kind of trump results sometimes. And it's getting to the bottom of why you're feeling that way and what's right for you. And like for me personally, if my ferritin is below 50, I don't feel good. And the doctor would look at that and be like, oh, you look great. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case for me. So it's really just learning more about yourself, about what's right for you, what that actually means for you, how to get there, and then how to maintain it. My biggest goal is always to help people develop a sustainable approach to fueling that they can do indefinitely through all seasons of life, not just throughout their running career, and just develop that healthy relationship with food. So that's kind of my biggest, my like one-on-one coaching. And then I have a couple group coaching programs for high school and college athletes, which I love working with those populations because that's when I felt like I needed the most support.
Right.
So it's just a lot more like education-based kind of helping do some myth busting, walking you through those different components of fueling for performance, and Q&A sessions where we can talk about nutrition or running, you know, because I'm both, so I can help you with both.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's kind of what I have now. And I'm working towards adding another group for marathoners because I love working with people who are training for, you know, their first marathon or they want to run a PR or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That population too. But yes, love working with any endurance athletes. I work with some non-endurance athletes as well, and just all ages, all levels, here to help for sure.
Love that. We will be sure to include your website and ways to contact you in our show notes, because I think it's really important work. It's work that I've been doing for years too, and we need more help with it, and you're doing a fantastic job.
Thank you.
And I mentioned too for the future, because you've got the Olympic trials coming up in June, is it?
Yes, in
yes.
June.
Mm-hmm. So super excited for you to continue to pursue that. And then you also did share that this will likely be your last year, 2024 will be your last year of running at this level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, at this level.
Yes.
Yes, it is. I know. It's funny. I think I feel very fortunate to get to choose that I'm going to be done after this year. I know a lot of people, unfortunately, run into injuries or things that kind of force them out of the sport and feel like they have a lot of unfinished business. And that's really hard. So I feel really at peace about this decision to move past this level of running. And I've absolutely loved it, but it's a lot of work. It's a big sacrifice. And I'm kind of at a point in my life where, you know, being realistic with how competitive I am, you know, yes, I'd like to make the trials, make the final.
Yeah.
Am I going to make a team? I mean, I don't want to write myself out, but odds aren't in my favor. And so I think just I'm at the point where I feel like I have really given myself the opportunity to get everything out of this sport.
Yeah.
I'm super excited to go for it one more time. It's funny. I actually sometimes feel like more motivated knowing it's my last year. Sometimes I'm like, oh, I can probably count down how many 16-mile long runs I have left in my career, and you know, all these things where some people might feel like of course it's sad, and of course it's going to be different to end this chapter, but I'm actually getting married at the end of September, so it's going to be a fun, like, you know, end of one chapter, start of a new chapter.
Yeah,
I feel really at peace with it. My teammates are all supportive. Joe's supportive. We're like, let's do it. So I'm just excited to finish on my terms and
I love that.
Just give it everything I have and and then see what life has in store for me afterwards.
Right. I mean, you've got this great career going for you already, and you coach as well, right? At a local high school. So that's, you know, that's fun.
Yeah, so it's actually my old high school with my old head coach who coached me in high school.
That's awesome.
So it's fun.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's, you know, there's a lot that goes into making a decision for a life change, but I'm glad that it feels right for you. So you're super excited to, you know, you're motivated to finish strong and see how far you can get at this level. But, you know, there's so many other opportunities and ways to be involved in this sport and other sports through your role as a dietitian, as a coach. Mm-hmm. And congratulations on your engagement and your upcoming wedding.
Thank you. Yes. Planning a wedding on top of everything is, you know,
super busy.
I said, I like to make myself as challenged as possible in my life.
So busy.
Right on par.
Thank you for going over time. I have a few final quick questions. You ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. Go for it.
If there's one food you could eat every single day for the rest of your life and never be sick of it, what would it be?
Ice cream. I do that anyway.
Yeah.
Never get sick of that.
Love hearing that. It's one of my top as well.
Yeah.
What's your favorite sport to participate in?
I mean, I would say track. It's really the only sport I'm good at.
Yeah. Makes sense. You've dedicated a lot of time and effort into it. And what about as a spectator? Do you have a favorite sport to watch? Is it the same or different?
I really like watching either soccer or basketball. Those are probably my two favorite.
Yeah. And soccer is part of your roots there. as well.
Yes.
Okay. And then final question, to give a shout out to another female athlete, somebody well-known or just in your personal life for just being an inspiration or a role model, who would that be and why?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I'm surrounded by 15 of my favorite female athletes every day on Team Boss.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's tough. I think honestly, all the women on Team Boss are super inspiring to me because everyone has in their own way, like gone after what they've wanted, made it happen for themselves, found a way to make it work, surrounded themselves by people who are supportive, you know, advocate for what they want, what they need. And I've learned a lot from them just in life and in running. And I feel very grateful to be around them every day.
I love that. So to all the female athletes on Team Boss,
yes,
and to you, Maddie, thanks. Thank you for being an inspiring female athlete and sports dietitian and for helping other people fuel to their highest performances as well.
Thank you. You too, Lindsay.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you did, if you are a true fan of female athlete nutrition, then I would love if you could support our podcast by spreading the word. Share a review on your listening channel. Give us 5 stars. It really helps get the word out and get the show more views to positively impact others. Also, you can support the podcast by joining our Patreon. Head to patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition to consider a donation, or even better, join our membership where you get extra monthly content and perks. We don't want you to simply listen alone. We want you to be a part of a community and a movement of fierce, fit, and fueled female athletes. So patreon.com/femaleathletenutrition is where you can do exactly that, learn more, and join. A huge thanks to our affiliates and partners as well. Once again, Prevenix, Inside Tracker, Orgain, Practice Better, Jen and Carrie, please go check them out and their links in the show notes where you can get deals and discounts. Last, be sure that you do more than just listen. If you need help with fueling, it's time to take action. Head to my website to learn more. You can either book a free call with me to learn more about our coaching programs and how we can work directly with you, whether it's the fast track or otherwise. Or you can take our online self-study course, Female Athlete Nutrition. You can literally sign up and gain access right now. You can explore our downloadable products, including the Red S Recovery Guide, High Iron Fueling Guide. Or if you are a coach of a team, check out our brand new Coaches Toolkit for teams. You can also just learn more. We have a blog, a Red S quiz to see if Red S is affecting you. If you need help, I want you to get help fast. Too many girls and athletes struggle with nutrition, but you don't have to any longer. You can rise up with the power of nutrition, take action today in any of these avenues, and become fierce, fit, and fueled. Links in the show notes, and we'll see you next time.